I go for it. I should go everyone for coming out. And like Robert Costello said, big I should call out to the sponsors of today. I should call out for the people who worked very hard making the delicious food. And Robert Costello did not mention himself, so I'll say it. I should call out to Robert Costello for arranging things and putting these together. And Baruch Hashem, zochet to join together the kollel and the shul for a number of legal holiday ventures, and Mr. Shem, you should continue to be able to do so. Okay, so a couple of I don't know exactly how long there's a time limit here. I was told the first Seder, Rabbi Goldberger said the first Seder starting at 11:30 today because of this. Oh, he did not say that. Don't worry, we're not going to be here that long. I'll see. I'll see how long it takes. I imagine we're not going to be able to cover everything, or maybe even close to everything. There's a lot in this topic. For the reading material is there if you want for the, within these packets. And I realize I'll get to it when I by mistake left an entire portion out, which I'll mention outside. If anyone has more questions, I mean this seriously. I was not asked to announce this, and I don't know if it's my place to volunteer other people, but I will. This topic gets involved in a specific halachic area, which we're going to talk about, which is called Ben Pekua, which the Kollel for the last couple of months has been doing. They started the new topic about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. So just there's a lot of information. I was talking to Rabbi Tefer this morning, getting a lot more background. I should have gotten done earlier. So, but if anyone does have more questions or considerations or wants to explore the topic more, again, the Chavruta Kollel, I've been doing this for a couple of months, and it's a fascinating topic. Let's get to this. Okay, the oh and okay one and one more by way of introduction. I know there was one person specifically who was that I want you to come out with a maskana, a practical halachic conclusion of. Oh, you're there. I didn't see you there. Okay, so now you know that the name mention was real. Like a proud. What's the halacha lemaisa, which is often we want. And I'll tell you right now, to the best of my knowledge, there is no real halacha lemaisa. Now, it's not even, forget about halacha lemaisa. It's not even lemaisa lemaisa. It's not even something that's actual, because, and with this, I guess we'll introduce, the way that many, if you read any articles on lab-grown meat, cultured meat, there are different ways that they describe it. And it often starts in 2013 or 14, I forget which one. Professor Mark Post of somewhere in the Netherlands, I forget exactly where, created the world's first edible lab-grown meat product. It was a hamburger, and it cost approximately anywhere between $250,000 and $300,000 for that one burger. And it was well, he did it by creating strips of synthetic meat in a lab. I think it took about 20. They say it was about 20,000 strips of meat that had to be combined together to create this one hamburger patty. Obviously, like many technological and scientific advances in the beginning, it's a laborious process and it's an incredibly expensive, prohibitively expensive process. $300,000 or $250,000 for a burger is a lot of money. And next time you go to a high-priced restaurant, you can just keep, it's all about perspective. It's not $250,000 at least. And that's what happens. Technology, right? Computers, good, bad, or otherwise, whatever you feel about computers. A computer, which people can carry around computers in their pockets nowadays, computers used to be the size of an entire room. There was a room this size, bigger, smaller. Computers didn't really exist. They had a few of them around the country. Different universities had. That's why they say if anyone's a fan of Malcolm Gladwell, that's one of his examples in the 10,000-hour rule. That Bill Gates was in the university. It was University of Michigan, I think. Maybe Bill Gates went to the University of Michigan. And they're the one. They were one of the few places that happen to have this gigantic thing nowadays. And then technology miniaturizes everything and miniaturizes it, and then it becomes much more affordable as well. So it's not really practical right now in terms of a real sense. You're not seeing lab-grown meat on your table or in the grocery shelves for that reason. But like everything else, it might get there. And halacha wants to approach how to understand it. That's number one. But because it's not the because, partially because of that. A halachic debate that surrounds it is not yet conclusive, I think, really, by anyone. As late as some of these, so there are a lot of articles out there, and some were written, let's say, within about 8, 9, 10 years ago. Even one, though, I saw one recently written by Rabbi David Cohn of the CRC in Chicago. That was written as late as 2023, not that long ago. And he said there's really very little halachic conclusions as of now. And as the technology advances, it will change the halachic analysis and parameters of how we approach this. But let's get something. So that's where the, in terms of if you want to walk away, what is this, is it kosher? Great question. Is it milk, is it fleishis or parv? It's a great question. Can you have it with your cheese? These are all great questions, which we want to discuss and analyze. But to determine with any amount of, with any degree of certainty is not really where we are yet as the technology develops. On that first page, so if anyone has some of this packet that I have, that I tried putting together just to make it a little easier to follow along, I wrote in the beginning, I don't know if we have to go through it right now, but basically there's a stem cell, that got this from my Sentient Media and Mayo Clinic. There's a stem cell. Stem cells are one of the most versatile cells that we have in the body. It can be grown into virtually anything by a process called differentiation. And they use these things. It's heavily used in medicine because you're able to take a stem cell and transform it, if you will, into different parts of the body. It's very helpful when it comes to therapeutic medicine. And they also want to use it for these for the process of lab grown meat by taking a stem cell. And it seems like you take a stem cell, you can really manipulate it. I don't know how they do it, but you can manipulate the stem cell into being much of really whatever you want. We know the different types of meat, right? If you have a hot dog is different than a hamburger, it's different than a chicken patty, a chicken nugget, which is different than a steak and different types of steaks. But all different types, but these stem cells are versatile enough that they could be manipulated scientifically to be whatever they want it to be. It's a process, but it's able to. That's why they utilize these stem cells to start the process. The stem cells, it seems, and this is what creates one of the big gigantic problems. It needs to come from a living source. Once an animal dies, the value of that stem cell and how effective it's going to be at doing what the scientists want it to be dramatically declines, and probably shortly after the animal is dead, the stem cell loses any amount of scientific viability, and then you can't do anything with it. So they take a stem cell again. So let's say before you take have a halacha here, you take a stem cell from a living animal. The scientists will take out a stem cell from a living animal. I think they take it from the shoulder, maybe. I saw someone say. I'm not sure. And they take out a stem cell from a living animal and they put it into a medium that promotes the growth of the stem cells. This growth, if you look, I have it in the middle of the first page here. FBS is the fetal blood serum, which is blood that's taken from the fetus of a pregnant cow that was killed, and that it's like it's bathed in that. And I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure whether it would be a problem. Whatever, Tepper pointed out to me that blood is that's why it's, because of the blood of a bepikur, which we'll get to bepikur in a minute. But the blood is still a problem. The chaylev and all other things are not. That seems to be, I think they may have synthetic ways of doing it, I'm not sure, but this seems to be the most common way of doing it. It's expensive. I saw in one article that 1 liter of this FBS is $1,000. I looked online, it seems like you could get it for cheaper, but again, you're still talking about hundreds of dollars. I don't know how much of this is necessary and how much is necessary for one piece of meat. But that's one of the reasons why these things are so expensive, because the environment within which the stem cell needs to grow is very expensive. Then there are also, if you want to have, there are certain things that are easier to take a hot dog, to make a hot dog rather. You just take a lot of these cells, you lump it together, and you have a hot dog. If you want something, if you look at a piece of, if a person has a steak, there are different components to a steak. There's the bone, there's the fat. The more marbleized a piece of meat is, the better it is, the higher the fat content. Fat and meat are two different things. The way they try, there are two different ways, or more, I think, but the two main ways it seems that they try making, constructing a piece of meat. It's fascinating we're even using these words, constructing a piece of meat. Amazing what science can do. The construction of a piece of meat, they either create a scaffold, some sort of matrix using products that also have to be, if it's coming from a living source, it has to be kosher. And they allow the cells of these stem cells that are transforming into meat to be built around this structure, which is whatever you want it to be. The other way is using an edible 3D printer, where they feed in the organic material, they program, they give them the printer the model. I've never seen a 3D printer work, but I'm assuming it's the same idea as a regular 3D printer. It just will use organic material. You put input the model that you want to come out, and it will layer it. That's what it does. The 3D printer layers it and layers and layers and layers and layers and layers and layers all the substances that you want, whether if it's plastic, it's plastic. And if it's organic material, then it's organic material. And you layer it so it comes out to be the steak that you want. So those are different ways of doing it. So there are so many components here that have to be kosher if you're dealing with all of these things. So I try putting down on the bottom of the first page some of the halachic issues. I will run through them quickly, hopefully not too quickly. Again, there's an enormous amount of topics that need to be addressed in this area. We're not going to go through all these, even on this in this pack. I didn't go through all these, otherwise it would be much more involved. But some of the issues that need to be addressed, we have to keep in mind when dealing with this idea of synthetic meat, of cultured meat, of lab grown meat. Well, the first one I have it as number two. It really should have been, I think, flipped. Eivor min ha-chai. But we know eivor min ha-chai, basar min ha-chai, is a limb from a living animal or meat from a living animal. Are they the same thing? Are they different? We actually had a mishmar shaila about it a number of weeks ago. There's definitely many points of similarity, although they're not exactly the same. But the overall idea is that you're not allowed to, we're going to go through, that's one of the topics we'll discuss more in detail, is that you're not allowed to eat something from an animal that is alive. You can't extract food from a living animal. It's coming up in the Parshios. And an often quoted example is that of Yosef and his brothers. And this may have been part of their debate. He saw them eating something that looked like an Eiver Men Achai is something that is part of the seven Shiva mitzvahs b'nei Noach, the seven Noahide laws. It's something that applies universally, and you cannot extract something from it. If it's a live animal, you're taking from the cell from a live animal. It's something that's being extracted from something that's live, and therefore it'd be a problem. Going back to number one, ben pekua is an interesting. That as I said, that's what the Chavir Kol we're doing for the past couple of months. The fascinating, unique type of situation. Where maybe we could avoid the problem of Eiver Min Ha-Chai, which is where you have a fetus inside a properly slaughtered and kosher cow. That fetus does not, according to Torah law, does not require shechita, does not require to be, it's not required to be slaughtered. And maybe the suggestion is you can take this, you find these, not so hard to find, you find one of these fetuses, you can then harvest its stem cells for your cultured meat, for your lab grown meat, for your synthetic meat. Number three is Kol Yotam Min HaTameh Tameh. We'll skip that for now and for the rest of the day. Number four is Bittul. If we're talking about you're taking one stem cell, some people make the argument that you can nullify it in the vast amount of other material that's being produced over here. Again, putting the FBS issue aside, let's say you're able to use some sort of synthetic growth environment, then maybe you can take that stem cell. And it's one tiny little cell. I don't know how many they use, but then, let's see. It's on the cellular level. It's a tiny little thing. It's being put into a percentage-wise, much larger mixture. Maybe you could say, yes, maybe it did indeed come from a bad source, but it's so many, many times nullified and it was mevatel in the overall mixture that we know there's a concept called right. If you have a drop of milk that falls into your challah, if it's more than a 60th, and all the different types of things that calls me now. Okay, yeah, for Bittul, if you think that the Chavir is like they did it a couple of weeks ago, so all the Bittul stuff you can talk about them now. So you can nullify it. So that's the halakha, and it has many 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 applications. So that's what I'm doing now also. So there are a lot of problems potentially that need to be explored. I forgot to fix my numbers there. Okay, sorry. The second number five, which is a davar, a maimid, which means when something is the genesis, if you will. If you have something that's the genesis of a product or of a process, a classic example of this is the rennet of in the cheesemaking process. Nowadays, you could use synthetic enzymes in the milk to create cheese, but if you're going to use something that's organic, then it needs to be kosher, even if it's a tiny little bit. But because it's the thing that made the process go or makes the process stay, however you're going to define a davar ha-maimed, then that gives it a chashivas, that gives it a value and importance in halacha and in Torah law or rabbinic law, depending. That's you can't ignore it. The whole idea, or one way of saying the idea of bittul, of saying the idea of nullification, is that we could ignore that. We could see that it's not really there. According to the Torah, tells us it's not really there. Well, how can you say it's not there if it's the genetic source of this entire process? So if even though it's a stem cell, it's a tiny little thing, and really in the numbers, it might be bottled, it might be nullified. If it's the whole source of it, if you take away, you can't have that. You can't have your steak or your synthetic burger without the stem cell. It is part of that process, part of that whole part of the whole process of having it. You can't say that we could ignore it, and therefore maybe you can't use this idea of bittul. Going to number six, zevah zegorim is another concept to make it a little bit more complicated. And when you're talking about something that's a davar hamaimid, which again is something I'm calling it. I'm not saying this is the best definition, but for ease of use, to say that it's the start of the process, it's the genetic start of the process, it's the genesis of the process, it's what keeps it going. If you have multiple components in a process that are necessary for the process to work, to thrive, to exist, that's zevah zegorim. Each that you have multiple things that are contributing to this process, and in that case, perhaps depending on the situation, you can treat the davar hamaimed a little bit less stringently, and you may be able to nullify it. We're not going to touch davar hamaimed. We're not going to touch the zevah zegorim. But these are just some of the halacha concepts that need to be explored. Another problem with being mevatel something, which is the first number five that I have on that list, is a mevatel nisul lechatchila. You're not allowed to lechatchila. You're not allowed to. I still have never really found a great word. Ideally is the best I think. Ideally, I believe in some of these. I think in I guess Latin, some of these articles I've been reading lately. I think ab initio is where they said lechatchila, which was incredibly not helpful to me. I figured out what it meant from context, but ideally, the idea is that you're doing this a forethought. You're doing it intentionally. You're doing it in an ideal fashion, not just ex post facto, not just because you got stuck. You're not allowed to purposefully and intentionally be mevatel something, mevatel iser. If you have something that's usser, you are not allowed to intentionally be mevatel. And this comes up a lot. Those who join us at the Smichas Chaver program, that's something we just discussed lately. It comes up a lot. Can you make smoothies with ingredients that you know for sure has bugs, may have bugs, probably has bugs, and there's all different levels. Are you allowed to chop up those bugs, in which case those bugs are not whole, and therefore they could be nullified in the resulting mixture? Are you allowed to do that? But you're doing that with the knowledge of forethought, and that's going to happen. Maybe that's a problem of mevatelness of the chatchila. So over here also, if I'm putting it, let's say the stem cell is a problem. If the stem cell is a problem, then and I, even if you're going to say there's a way of being mevatel it, that I'm going to nullify, but I know that's what I'm doing. I'm taking something that's usser, something that came from a living animal, and I'm putting it into this larger percentage, and I know that it's going to be nullified. Is that allowed or not? That's also something that needs to be explored. Kavash kemevoshel is the concept of something is soaking in a liquid medium for more than 24 hours, it has the halachic status of cooking it. So I think it stays in this FBS, if you're using FBS, and not something that's synthetic, it stays in there for longer than 24 hours, then if that's really a problem, then you really be up the creek. Nirulei Naim is a halachic concept that says that that in order for something to be halachically recognizable, it has to be recognizable. It has to be something that you could see. Can you utilize it over here? No one here, as to the best of my knowledge, can see a cell with your eyes. Even if you have glasses, if someone has the best vision in the world, you cannot see a cell without the aid of great magnification. You cannot do that. So maybe one can say that maybe we could employ that idea. We'll get to that a little bit as well. And if it's not nirulei naim, it doesn't have real halachic status. And therefore, yes, it's a stem cell. Yes, it came from a living animal. But who cares? Even a living animal. Therefore, what? It's not something I can see. I'll jump ahead a little bit, it's a little bit, maybe a little bit gross, but the Aruch HaShulchan, which is somewhere in the sheets, the Aruch HaShulchan in Simen Pei Dalet, Sif Lamevav, he's discussing the idea about bugs, and if anyone who lives in New York City with the reservoirs of New York City water, either you know what I'm talking about, or you're traumatized by what I'm talking about, or both, it's there may be bugs in the New York City reservoir system. I can drink the water, so you have to have filters. You can use the filters on Shabbos, and makes a lot of challenges. Excuse me. So one of the arguments might be that I cannot see it. That might not be the case, but one of the arguments might be that I can't see it. So says the Aruch HaShulchan, the fact that you can't see it is a real halakha principle. He said if it wasn't true, He says, "Lo nidin the Torah l'malach ha'asharis." The Torah was not given to angels. We live in this world. He says that if you scientists, the people who know teva, the scientists will tell you that if you walk around, everyone in this room right now is ingesting tens upon tens of thousands of bugs just in the last minute, because there are microscopic organisms that live in the air, says the Aruch HaShulchan. And if you breathe, then if we don't give credence to this halachic concept of nirlei naim, that something has to be visible to be a problem, then you can't breathe. You have to wear N95s. Don't bring up the topic. You have to wear masks. That's how I have to do it. How can I breathe the air? The air is filled with bugs. So says the Aruch HaShulchan, that if you don't see it, then it may not have halachic status. So maybe we could employ that over here. A stem cell is not visible. It's not nearly naim, and therefore maybe it's okay. Gelatin. Let's skip that for a second. There was someone brought in gelatin for a little bit. Maybe we'll talk about it a little bit. Again, we spoke about it by the Smichas Chavruta program. Marasayan. I can do. It's also something we spoke about in the Smichas Chavruta program. Marasayan. I can do something that looks like it's a problem, even if it's actually not a problem. This looks like a hamburger. Can I have a cheeseburger? Can I have a cheeseburger, or is that a problem because it looks like a burger? It tastes like a burger. I mean, or maybe not. I'm not sure. Maybe the first one didn't, but maybe the technology helped it get better. So, are you allowed to? do you have to treat it like meat, or can you say that it's not really meat? Which really gets into the next one, which is or the other way. Is it fleshes or parve? A lot of people discuss whether if you have this burger, are you now fleshes? Can you not have milk products for the next 1, 3, or 6 hours, depending on your minute? Or can we treat it as parve? There's one more topic that I did not put down there. It was an oversight, which is the topic of. Let's say, is it relevant to this? I said it's not directly relevant, but it does come up. I put it more in the notes that I put in the back, which is just where I was putting down my own thoughts. There's a concept called. I guess it really gets involved. Let's go back to the where I have as number one, the Ben Pekua. The Ben Pekua, which is the fetus inside a properly shechted kosher mother cow. There are two different ways of looking at that Ben Pekua. One is the idea of Gesundheit. The one is that one way of looking at it is that this fetus, which is inside the shechted mother cow, is itself shechted. Right? The reason why you're allowed to eat it is because in Lamdus, in Havana, in Torah thought, the fact that you shechted the mother, the Torah, I don't know what the right word is, each word here can impact the understanding. But it like transfers the shechita, if you will. It transfers the slaughtering of the mother, and we view it as if the baby itself was slaughtered. There was a kosher shechita, and the pasuk that tells us that you're allowed to eat this fetus, it's telling us the mechanism by which we're allowed to eat this fetus is because we view it as if it was slaughtered. That's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at this idea, and this is broadly, and there are other ways. Another broad way of looking at it is that the Torah, when it tells us that it's allowed to be eaten, is telling us it does not need shechita at all. It doesn't need shechita. This normally a cow, a goat, or whatever it is, requires halachic slaughtering. This is a very unique example. It's a very unique situation where the Torah is telling us it does not require slaughtering. It's not as if it was slaughtered. It just doesn't need it. If a fish doesn't need to be slaughtered. It just needs to be dead. It doesn't mean slaughtered. So this Ben Pekua, this fetus, is like a fish. It doesn't need to be slaughtered. Those are two broad ways. Like I said, I was talking about whatever. Was he there?
Yeah.
Okay, so I spoke about whatever. Maybe other ways where there's a melding of these two ideas. But these are some of the ideas that really also should be that I did not put on the sheets or source that I meant to. Is a Rambam and the Beis Yitzchak that discusses the Rambam, which gets into the last halakha topic that I'll mention, and then we'll get past the first sheet, maybe, I hope, which is the idea of Osov Esbeno, which is that we know there's a halachic, this is from the Torah. The Torah says you cannot slaughter a mother and its child on the same day. So how does this Ben Pekua thing work? If it's indeed being shechted, if you look at it as if it's being actually slaughtered in Torah thought, then essentially you're slaughtering a mother and its baby on the same day, which is a problem. So why would this Ben Bakua thing be allowed at all, unless there's something else that's going on? But how exactly would that work? Okay, those are some of the halakha topics. Again, it's an enormous topic. It covers a tremendous amount of different halakha topics. Now, by way of introduction, you know, everyone's like, 20 minutes in, by way of introduction, what? I missed it. What? Is it, that's what it is? Someone told me the time. I tend to lose track of time, for real. Like, let me know. And we always discuss this. I very much enjoyed preparing this because it's very geschmack. But we're not going to be able to go through everything. But okay, I'll try picking and choosing. By way of introduction to this topic, a lot of people have the first two that are on the next page, which is a Gemara, the idea of not natural meat or food. We don't have synthetic foods in old halachic literature, not that I know of at least, but we do have miracle foods. We have not natural, so it's a similar idea. We do have miracle foods. There are a number of places where miracle foods come up. One is the probably the most often quoted one. No, not the most often quoted one in the Gemara is the one that's on top. There are others. I didn't put them on the sheet. With Rav Shimon ben Chalafta. Rav Shimon ben Chalafta was accosted by a pair of lions, by some lions, and if you're on Rav Shimon ben Chalafta's level. He said the pasuk in Tehillim, "Makfir Mishragim Matarav, Vakish Mekela Achlam." I think some discussion whether he said the second half of the pasuk or not. And two thighs came down from Shemayim, and he gave one to distract them, and one, the other one, he brought into the base measures. He said, "Is this a tohar or tummy? Is this I'm going to say the word kosher or not? It's not really what he said, but he said, is this a tohar animal? Is it a kosher animal?" And they said to him, "They said, you know, look, nothing comes out. Hashem's not going to give you something that's not kosher to eat, but we could assume that it is." That's one idea of not natural meat that we see. Another one, which is often quoted, and I think you hear a lot of, you know, it's favorite fodder of elementary school teachers. I know for sure. I've said it in the classroom. I imagine there are people in this room who have said it as well. When Avram Avinu, a couple of parshios ago, a few parshios ago, when Avram Avinu was serving his guests, it says that he served them butter and meat. Right? So many mefarshim commentaries wonder how Avram Avinu could do that. How could he give them meat and milk together? The probably the most basic approach, which is after what I quoted here from the Malbim, is that he just did it in that order. He did it in butter and then meat. Therefore, there's really no problem. I guess he had to give them something to wash out their mouths in between, and they wash their hands, and everything's fine. But the Malbim quotes from Chazal that Avram Avinu, and he says that this is what the pasuk means when the pasuk says that Avram gave him from the cow Asher Asah, that he made. He literally created the cow. He used the deep esoteric concepts of Sefer Yetzirah, the book of creation, whatever exactly that is, and he created a cow. But because the first one, if you remember the story, one that ran away. So there are different versions, I guess, of the story. Either Avram Avinu chased after the calf and he found Moris Machpelah, or he ran away and he's like, "What am I supposed to do? I need another calf. And I guess he had just said he's small to get it. And what am I going to do? So if you're stuck and you're Avram Avinu and the calf runs away, you make another one. You use the Sefer Yetzirah, he literally created a cow or a calf. So says the Malbim that according to that, you'd be fine. Now there's only a problem of meat and milk when you're dealing with actual cows, actual meat, but not miracle meat that Avram Avinu created. Two more have to do with oil. Maybe we'll I'll mention very briefly. Maybe we'll get back to it. One is the when the wife of Avadya, right? If you remember the Malachim, Kings 2, Avadya in Malachim Aleph in Kings 1. Had supported the 50 prophets and 50 prophets, right, against the wishes of the king and queen. And later on, his wife was completely destitute, and she came to Elisha, and she said, "What am I supposed to do? Gather all your stuff," and the oil miraculously filled. In any case, the Radak, that's the third one on the sheet here, he quotes from a Tosefta, when she came to him, and she asked him a halakha question, "Do I need to take miser? Do I need to take tithes from this oil?" And he said, "No, this is miracle oil. Miracle oil does not require tithe taking." And the last one is something that's coming up. We're in the month of Kislev, with the oil of the Beis Hamikdash, the Chashmonaim. Right, the Chashmonaim came in, and there's a lot of as I think everyone is familiar, very often quoted, the Beis Yosef is not his question. Ask the question. I have a sefer in my house that gives 100 answers. I have another sefer in my house that gives 500 answers. And I have a third sefer in my house that gives 1,000 answers. So if you need answers to this question of the oil and the, and there's a lot of answers that are out there. It's wild the amount of Torah literature on this one question. But Rav Zevin, he quotes from Chaim Soloveitchik, who discusses this oil also, about whether this oil, how exactly the Chashmonaim manipulated the oil, if you will, to make sure that they're able to light it. But that's another time. Maybe we'll get to that at the end about that miracle oil. Let's turn the page. We'll do a little bit on Avraham Menachai and Ben Pekua. The first page is just the sources. I'm going to skip that page because we're running out of time. If anyone wants to know why milk is not really directly relevant, if anyone wants to know why milk is not a problem of Avraham Menachai, that's on the bottom over there. There are different sources. The primary source seems to be, that's the one that's most often quoted, it's from the Gemara Mechoros, is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu praised the land of Eretz Yisrael as a land that's flowing with milk and honey. And if milk was not kosher, then Hashem would not praise the land of Eretz Yisrael with it. But in theory, without a specific directive from the Pasuk, we would treat milk as a problem of Avraham Menachai. If anyone was exactly what the Gemara's question there, if it's Avraham Menachai or Bas Menachai, whatever, there are definitely we showing them that say it's Avraham Menachai. So I'm using the words Avraham Menachai. I'm not sure if I'm getting looks about that or not. But there are Rishonim, Tosis Rid, others say that it's Avraham Menachai. But it's not a problem because the Torah, Hashem says, Eretz Zavos Chalav V'Dbash, it's a land that's flowing with milk and honey. If we were not allowed to drink milk, rather, then Hashem would never do something like that. Okay, let's go turn the page to the next one. Maybe the stem cell is so minuscule that it loses halachic reality. So the first one is the first paragraph over here is one that I mentioned before. The reason why we can't employ that idea is because of Shlomo Zalman Orbach. He's talking in the second one of Shlomo Zalman Orbach. He's not arguing with the Aruch HaShulchan. He says that we could breathe. Nothing wrong with breathing. There's nothing wrong with breathing in all the microorganisms that's in the air because it is indeed so tiny and invisible that it doesn't have a halachic status. However, says Shlomo Zalman, he was talking about, I just snipped out of this part. I think he, one second, he was talking about, I believe he was talking about grafting trees. That's what he was talking about. He's talking about grafting trees. And in that conversation, when he's talking about grafting trees, Handosa genetis, in that first line over there, genetic reconfiguration, engineering, right? So he says that if something can be and is manipulated by science, in this case, if it's something that's maybe not visible to the naked eye, that's true. You cannot see the cellular material with your eye. But it's something that you're using, right? That's what they do. They're taking a cell. They're not taking nothing. So they need to use special tools to see it, to extract it, to manipulate it, to guide it, to do whatever they need to do. But once you're doing that, you can no longer. So the whole idea of Nirlei Naim, it sounds like Shlomo Zalman is saying, is something that if I can't see it, it has no chashivas, it doesn't, almost doesn't exist in halakhic literature. But if I'm using it and I'm taking it and I'm manipulating it, then you can't say that it doesn't exist. You can't. The fact that I cannot see it, it's not like there's a pasuk or a gzeiras hakasha that says if something's not visible, then it doesn't exist. The non-visibility or the invisibility of it, that's what I assume what I'm saying, the invisibility of it tells me that it's something that doesn't have a lot of significance. But if I'm using it, I'm taking it, this is what some guy going into the laboratory, this is what he's doing all day, you cannot say it doesn't have a lot of significance. And therefore, for our stem cell, even though it's invisible, our stem cell would still be a problem because it's very much in use and that's what they're doing. And therefore, it would still be a problem. It would still be a problem on that regard. Okay, so what they tried doing, I wanted to mention before, I wanted to give thanks to Rabbi Tzvi Holland, sent me an audio recording of Rabbi Moshe Heineman, who gave a shiur. I was using that a lot for some of these sources and some of these ideas. In general, there's a tremendous amount of stuff out there. I was using a lot of trying to read a lot of different articles, a lot of different tshuvos that are written about this. They're all very helpful. Rabbi Heineman's shiur was one was particularly helpful. Another one which was very helpful was Rabbi Menachem Ganak has a set of svarim on kash called Gan Shoshanim, I think. And someone sent me some pictures of some of these things I discussed. That was also very helpful. So the idea potentially would be, what time did I start? What time did I start? Anyone know what time I started? What? Oh my gosh. Okay. Okay, we won't get through everything, don't worry. Okay. I'll mention, I'm not going to go through the sources then. I'll mention some of these ideas without going through the sources then. Basically, so we Ben Pekua, like we said, Ben Pekua is actually machlokas. It's a disagreement between the Chachamim, the sages, and Remeir. Ben Pekua is this fetus that was found inside a halakhically kosher and properly shechted cow, and that had a fetus inside of it. And according to the Chachamim, Mida Oraisa, according to Torah law, you're allowed to eat it without shechting it itself. Again, we said before, does that mean that it's viewed as being shechted, or does it mean that it is that doesn't require shechita or some hybrid of, thereof? But maybe you can take this Ben Pekua, and there's then we can take this Ben Pekua, and you can extract the stem cells from this Ben Pekua. And you say, what do you mean? But it's coming from something that's live. You know, this animal you're allowed to actually eat live. You can actually eat it live. You can't have its blood, but it's the cells, anything else, the fats of it, everything else is allowed to be eaten in its present state. So let me do that. Now, the problem that still would apply is that even if you escape this Torah problem, if you will, Torah, I shouldn't say Torah problem, this Torah prohibition, this challenge on a Torah level, is at the Rabbanah level, which the Chachamim say, even though we say it doesn't require shechita, you can eat it even though it's alive, you just, you know, but once its feet touch the ground and it looks like a regular animal, then we have the problem of Maaseh, and we have the problem that it looks like a regular animal. Imagine you see someone, and this may have been what happened with Yosef and his brothers, according to some. And imagine you see someone going over to a live animal, Jewish person from Guy, he keeps halachos, and he goes over to an animal and he chops off its head with a sword, or he bashes its head in and kills it, and it's killed, and he starts eating it. What are you? How can you not shecht it? You can do that. Oops, sorry. Oh, it's a Ben Pekua. Maybe if I go over and ask him, I'll find that out. But if I don't do that, it's a big problem. I think this guy's eating something that's not shechted properly. So the Chachamim said once it's actually starting to walk and well, not walk and talk. It wasn't starting to walk. It wasn't starting to walk and move around and it hits the feet and it hits the ground. Then we have to treat it like that because of this issue of Maaseh. So you still have that problem. You go over to you take the stem cell from a Ben Pekua. Unless it's something that you know, unless it's something that was just this animal suspended in the air and never actually had that problem, which I guess is something you could do, but industry-wise, that doesn't seem to be very effective to have all your, you know, to have a. There's a Ben Pekua farm in Australia, which is very, very, very controversial, but maybe they can make it even better if it's a levitating Ben Pekua farm and all the animals are somehow. I don't know if that would work, but maybe that's lush in the Gemara if it's feet hit the ground. All the calves that are born from these, well, from the original ones. Once you start, you're good. But the original ones, it's like levitates, and then you're good to go. But since that's not the normal case, you have this problem with Maaseh. Now, so Rabbi Heinemann suggested, and maybe you could get away with that. There's a Haggos, a Shri, who let me oh, sorry, let me back up. There's a Gemara that says, let's say this Ben Pekua is born with its hooves as a cow. Now, cows we know have split hooves. That's a normal cow. But let's say you have an abnormal cow. Now, it was some sort of genetic disfigurement for this cow when it was born with hooves that were completely closed. The Gemara says, Baya, I think, Baya says that it's that would be okay. Why? Because it's so odd that people will talk about it. And we know the idea of Maris Ayin is that people don't know. But here people will know. Did you hear about this Ben? That's what the words they'll use, the way that they explain it. Did you hear about this Ben Pekua that has closed hooves? Wow. We'll be talking to the town. I guess before WhatsApp statuses, that was the exciting news of the day. Whoa! Ben Pekua with the closed hooves. Who knew? That everyone got very excited. But all the people know, it's a Ben Pekua. So it won't be any Maaseh anymore because I know that this is a Ben Pekua animal, and people will not extrapolate from that. This is one of the issues of Maaseh. Hey, I can now eat a cow without shechting it because that's the Ben Pekua one. Everyone knows about that. What about, yeah. Potentially. Now, let's get to that in a second. I'm going to give you another example. I don't have an answer for you specifically. Rabbi Heinemann did actually mention that he knows of Ben Pekuas that were born without a tail. But also, cows need tails to chase away the flies. So this was a, he felt, it sounded like, in the way that he was talking about it, it sounded like that would be. So depending on what it was, it might have to be unusual enough that it excited people's attention or that gave it something different. And then how do you define that? I don't know. You probably have to be a little bit of a farmer to know. I mean, know what's regular enough, but I'm not sure. So the Haggos HaShri said that the Rav Sharira Gon, who was the father of Haigon, had a Ben Pekuas that he served by the chuppah of his son. And he served by the chuppah of his son. I don't know if it was Rav Haigon that was getting married, but one of his kids was getting married. And he said that he smashed his head with a cleaver. He killed it that way. He did not sheft it, and he served it. Why? And the Rama in Simeon Gimel applies this, that this, something else was unusual here. What was unusual? It was a special event called a chuppah. Now, that's not unusual, but it's unusual enough, and that's why it doesn't have to be something that's so crazy. It was unusual enough that the circumstances would have people talking. It was a chuppah. It was a place where people got, wow, did you see what Rav Shira Gaon did? And that would be enough also to remove the issue potentially of Maris Ayin. So that would be so. Rav Heinemann wanted to suggest. He wanted to suggest that if you have printed on the packaging that this is ben pekuah meat, that would be enough. The point is to let people know that this is something that was from a ben pekuah. I'm not going to get into it. I put it in the notes if anyone was interested or not. There is another sheet out there that you would require multiple oddities, and one's not enough. It's the last three words of that Shulchan Aruch Yesh Megamgegim. For those who disagree, and how much I disagree, if you want to take a look, I don't have it on the sheets. It's a Lavush. Lavush Taz Shachnik. It's kind of a Daf Acharon response. The Shach and Taz go back and forth on that, on how many strange things there would need to be, and the different opinions there were. Yeah. That is a great question. Okay, so what Shulchan wants to know is that what happens, I think if I understood you correctly, if you have two ben pekuahs and they have a kid. Right. So the halacha is that's a great case. And that's really where your what you just asked was the start of this farm. The whole farm doesn't really have to be levitating. It was more of a because once, like Shulchan said, once the halacha is once you have a ben two ben pekuahs that have a child, that and you keep that sort of genealogy of just ben pekuahs, then you'll be good to go forever. That's what this person wanted to do. They wanted to make this. What? I'm talking about the Torah. You have without the Maris Ayin. Okay. What? No, but it's a ben pekuah farm. If you whatever, however you get a void. So that might be where they're saying. Like if everyone knows that, or if everybody or enough or it becomes global enough. People know this is ben pekuah farm, and it says on the packaging. That's what Heinemann was trying to suggest, that even without the even without some of these other things, there are other ways to manipulate the potential problem of Maris Ayin. But so there's two things. There's a Torah issue. Does it require shechita? And then you're right. It's a great question. Of once you have both parents are ben pekuahs, and then the kid does not need shechita also, and that could continue forever. And in terms of the Maris Ayin issue, however you get around this one, however you want to get around this issue with packaging again. And there may be other opinions out there. So Rav Heinemann was choosing one side, but there are other opinions out there of how odd the oddity has to be. And again, that might be a little bit difficult to define. Okay, I'm going to skip a. All right, there's one. Okay, still stem cell extraction. I'm going to do that one last one. Still might be a problem because there is a halacha that an animal has to be dead, even if it doesn't require shechita potentially. Or let's use shechita. An animal has to be dead. Let me say it this way. An animal must be dead in order to eat from that animal. So potentially, even if this animal does not require shechita, it might need to be dead. There is, if you want to look at that, you can look at the notes. Rav Heinemann suggested that that may apply to this animal. I was wondering how it would, and that's where it gets into that issue of does this animal require shechita or not. Again, if anyone that's put on the sheet of the Rambam in Hilchos Shechita in Perek Yud Beis Halacha Yud. Seems to revolve around this topic potentially. This is the way Gesundheit the Beis Yitzchak is a commentary on the it's not a commentary, it's Shal Tshuvas. The Beis Yitzchak explains that the Rambam was grappling with this idea of how we look at a ben pekuah. Is it something that requires shechita, but we say that it got it through the mother, or do we say that it doesn't require it at all? It seems like he was revolving around that. Now, if that's the way to explain the Rambam, then there are many others, I think Rashi and Chulin. I think the Taz Rashi and Chulin is maybe a drop vague. Is that the Taz in Yud Gimel on this, what we're talking about? I think is extremely clear, not like that understanding in the Rambam. So I'm not sure exactly how far you could take it. I'm skipping the whole thing of let's skip. We'll do one last part because and then we'll close it there. Let's go to the part that says Fleshigs or Pariv. So and then we'll end with that. So I was reading out loud. It's the Gan Shor Shana by Rabbi Gnack. This is on the Otzer HaChachma that I have. It has volumes Aleph, Beis, and Gimel, and it's not in this one. So I guess it was a later volume of what he has. He quotes a Rosh Hashanah that says it would be Pariv. If you have his lab-grown burger, says a Rosh Hashanah, it's Pariv, and you can eat, you have milk afterwards because it's not an animal. It's not a meat, not an animal setting. Hashem said animals are fleshings, not this thingy, which is not an animal. It comes from an animal, but it's not an animal. Minotaur. He says meet the Rabbanim, we would treat it like chicken, but at least on a Torah level, he said you would not be fleshings on a Torah level. Then Rabbi Gnack quotes Rav Asher Weiss and Rav Mordechai Gross. Rav Mordechai Gross, Rav Asher Weiss, I think is maybe more well known than Rav Mordechai Gross, but both very big post-communists as well. They disagree. They say it'll be fleshing because if you examine in a laboratory, it's indistinguishable from real meat, and therefore fleshings. I'll be honest. I have no. I don't understand that svara. I don't know what that means. Just because it looks like it, and then also the posting of the kashrus of the OK has an article, has a number of articles on this, a 3-part series on it, and they said that the posting of the OK said that it's fleshings. They didn't say who it is. I don't know who the posting is, but the posting of the OK also said it's fleshings. I don't know why that should be true. I think those earlier sources that we quoted, which I think Rav Asher Weiss actually wants to use, if you look at the notes again, there's not enough time for this, but he wants to use that story in the Gemara of Reb Shimon ben Chalafta and the two heavenly pieces of thighs of meat that came down from Shemayim as a proof that it's fleshiks. I wasn't sure. I mean, maybe we could prove it the other way. I don't know how it's a proof, but in any case, I think the other ones are, I think the Malbim seems to clearly indicate that it would not be fleshiks, right? That's his whole answer. Avram served the meat and milk because he used something. Now, again, this is different. I'm not saying it's exactly the same at all. I'm not trying to bring a proof at all. I'm just trying to prove that I don't understand the other side. But there's a qualitative difference between our case, which actually comes from a stem cell of a meat product, and something that's entirely miraculous. So I'm not trying to say the same, but I think we do see the concept that you could have something that looks, that's their argument. That's something that looks like meat, tastes like meat. If it looks like a dog, walks like a dog, talks like a dog, it's a dog, right? So this is a meat. It looks like it. Take a look at it. It looks like a meat. It looks like everything. It looks and tastes like meat. It acts like meat. You could fry it like meat. You could grill it like meat. You could do everything like meat. So it's meat. Well, we have other cases where that was the case. Avraham Avinu created a whole cow. No more meat-looking thing than that. And he was still served it with butter. The oil of Eishes Avadia. Also, it was oil. It was such real looking oil. She sold it. That's how she paid back all her creditors, right? If you remember the story from Malachim, she paid back all her creditors. She sold it as oil. Everyone used it as oil, and yet Elisha Hanavi told her, "You don't have to take off Meiser from it because it's not real oil." So you see that the halachic status of something is not necessary just because it looks and talks like it. And I think that's the Hanukkah thing. If you want to go back and look at Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim is discussing. He needs to say that the He's uncomfortable saying that the oil in the lamps of the menorah of the Chashmonaim miraculously refilled. Now, it could be because it's a special Xeris Akasav, maybe. But why? Because if it's miracle oil, you can't fulfill your obligation of lighting the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash using miracle oil. Again, if you say this argument, then why not? If it has all halakhic statuses of something because it looks and tastes and acts like it, then presumably it's the same. Rabbi Chaim says that the qualitative burning of the oil, well, the qualitative nature of the oil of the lamps and the menorah is what made the oil burn much, much slower. So the miracle wasn't in the replenishment of the oil. The miracle was in the qualitative element of the oil that it burned slower, and therefore it just lasted for 8 days. But Reb Chaim is not comfortable saying, that it replenished miraculously, because that wouldn't work. So I'm not sure, I don't know that this meat for sure has to be fleshings. The last two things over there, the Prima Gadim and the Chassam Sofer, was another thing from the OK article about juice that comes out of meat, but that's also about the fleshes of Parv. Most post-Gim Lamaisa seem to say that it would be treated as fleshiks. I don't know why, but like I just said, I'm not sure that I totally understand why. But that's some of the halachic stuff. That, like we said, there's a ton more to get into. Each one of these things can really be explored at much, much greater depth and should be. If anyone has questions about the Ben Pekuah in particular, like I said, that, you know, the Kol Handel is last 2 months of getting involved in Bittul now. We could also, it's a very geschmack sugya. Like I said in the beginning, I don't know there's any agency or real piskei halacha that's coming out with a real definitive psak on how we treat this. because the industry is really still in its infancy. It's not hitting the shelves anytime soon, but it does make for some fascinating halachic conversation. And I'm not, we're not even talking about the theological, the, not theolog the Ashkafic element of it, which is also fascinating to talk about. But these are some of the halachic things to discuss, to chew over. I could have said that for the last 45 minutes. I didn't say that joke because it was bad then and still bad. But it's something to think about. It's something to, these are the different ideas to think about and to go into greater depth about. Yashikok, everyone for coming. Have a wonderful rest of your day and enjoy.